Good evening, everybody. Wonderful to see you all. I'm actually quite surprised how many of you are here and not with brooms and mops and dustpans in your hands, getting ready for Pesach. As you are all aware, we will not be having class the next 2 Wednesdays.
No, we need to figure out what.
Right? We're definitely not going to be having class the next 2 Wednesdays, but hopefully the following Wednesday we will be back on again. In case you've lost track of the calendar, next Wednesday evening is the first Seder. Okay? First Seder is obviously a major, major milestone on the Jewish calendar. It is perhaps the most pivotal mitzvah of telling over the story and making sure that we have clarity in terms of the story of the Exodus and how this was the monumental experience for us to become the Jewish nation. So it goes without saying that that deserves a talk unto itself. However, what is less well known is actually what happens prior to the first Seder. And that is Tuesday night this year. Tuesday night, which is the beginning of what is known as Erev Pesach, the eve of Pesach, right? The holiday officially doesn't start until Wednesday at sundown. However, there are certain mitzvos that already come into play the night before Pesach. It's known as the search for chametz, bedikas chametz, the search for chametz. It's a fascinating concept, and I would like to speak a little bit about that tonight. It's a unique mitzvah, and very, very unique. To really appreciate this, let's put this in perspective. We all know that on the holiday of Pesach itself, we're not allowed to eat chametz, what's translated as leavened products, breads of the sort. Okay? We all are familiar with that. But what the Torah tells us, though, based on the way it's phrased in the Torah, is that there is a time period before Pesach actually begins where the eating and deriving benefit of chametz already kicks in before the holiday. So in practical terms, I'll start at the end and work my way backwards. In practical terms, Wednesday morning this year, Wednesday before the Seder, approximately 10 or so o'clock in the morning, you have to be rid of all your chametz. You can't eat any more chametz, I think, after maybe 11-ish, somewhere around that vicinity. I didn't look up the timing for this year. If you remind me, I'll look before we finish class tonight. But there's a time period of where chametz can no longer be eaten, nor can it be found in your possession, meaning the ownership of any chametz that you have has to already have transferred to someone else before the holiday begins. But what's the process? So this is, I think many of us are familiar. The night before, that Tuesday evening, once it's already dark, what we have the custom to do is we put out 10 small pieces of chametz. It could be a small piece of a little piece of bread. I don't mean a whole slice, but you take one slice and you break it into 10 smaller pieces and you divvy it around the house. Some people use smaller pieces of chametz. In our house, we use Cheerios or whatever cereal happens to be left over that we haven't finished yet. You know, we're very heart healthy, so we use Cheerios. So, but it's also very good. By the way, I recommend highly you do not use crumbly bread or bagels or real challah rolls because they make a ton of crumbs. The last thing you want to do after you have spent the time cleaning and making sure you've gotten rid of your chametz is to then put out pieces of bread and have it scatter, and then you have back to square one in those places. So I love the Cheerios. I love anything that's really relatively small that doesn't make a lot of crumbs. And what we do in our house is usually my wife puts it in 10 places around the house. In a bedroom, in a living room, in a kitchen, usually not the kitchen, by the way, because our kitchen at that point is already turned over for Pesach and there is no chametz nearby. You cannot. I will be in a full body cast if I were to put one Cheerio in my wife's kitchen on Erev Pesach. That's just asking for trouble. So in other rooms, I don't put it out. She does, because then I really have to go searching. If I put it out, I know exactly where they are. I'm not really looking. I'm just going to go to the 10 places and be done with it. So, and our custom is she puts it out and we go looking for it. So, a couple of things. That's step number one, is after we've basically rid ourselves of pretty much all chametz, I have usually, again, just from my practical experience, there's no obligation to do it the Tuchman way, but it's very practical, it's very efficient, is that by the time we do the search for chametz, we probably have one box, one bin left of real chametz. Whether it's an extra bagel that's still there that one of my kids is going to want to eat as a midnight snack on the porch, or there's only a drop of cereal left, or one more, I don't know, one more rugelach, something that will be eaten that night or early the next morning. Because here's the quandary, folks. If, let's say, all my chametz, I can no longer eat chametz, just for argument's sake, I'm going to say 11 o'clock. 10 o'clock. Okay, let's just play it safe. By 10 a.m. Wednesday morning, I can no longer eat chametz. I don't know about you, but my stomach starts growling usually about 10 minutes after I can't have chametz anymore. So now I'm stuck. I can't really have chametz because I'm not allowed, but I'm not allowed to have any matzah product yet, because the halacha is that you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. You can't eat matzah the day before the Seder. Why? So that you have a hearty appetite for the matzah at the Seder. It will lose the attraction. It will lose that novelty of having matzah at the Seder. So you're stuck between the rock and the hard place come 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I can no longer eat chametz, and I can't really have any matzah products. So you can have fruits, you can have vegetables, you can have, if you're up to it, you can have Pesach kind of fish, you can have chicken, you can have that kind of stuff. That's fine. But you can't have chametz and you can't have matzah. So in our house, we have a tradition. My wife makes potato kugel. She makes, probably because we usually have a large crowd in our house at that point, she makes pans upon pans upon pans of potato kugel, fresh, hot, piping potato kugel. It is scrumptious, and it's the perfect food. It's filling. You can make a whole bunch at one time. She puts it in the oven, and we're good to go for the rest of the day. In the afternoon, again, fruits, vegetables, no problem. And that holds us and tides us over until the Seder. That's the basics. But let me go back a step. I told you Tuesday night, the night before the Seder, we have the search for chametz. That's the first thing. When I'm done with it, what do I do with those 10 pieces? Go ahead, Sharon. What do I do?
Burn them.
When?
Oh, you put them in a paper bag, and then I'd have to look at my calendar, but it says a time when you're supposed to burn them.
Okay.
The next morning.
Meaning sometime the next morning. Before the prohibition of having chametz in my possession. So again, using our example, if 11 o'clock is or 10 o'clock is the time frame, I go ahead and I burn it, and good idea with paper bag as opposed to plastic, because burning plastic is not good, right? There's a fellow here in Baltimore. We have a great thing. If I don't know, I'm looking around here. I don't know if any of you have ever been. The morning of Erev Pesach, this year, Wednesday morning, there's a community-wide chametz burning. It's under the auspices of the fire departments. There are major metal bins, garbage bins that they have fires in, and it's all under careful, watchful eye. And they even have the police department, because you're talking about thousands and thousands of people. Tens of thousands of people. Baltimore ain't no little hick town. There's a lot of Jews in this town, and they're all burning their chametz. all approximately the same morning, you know, somewhere between 7 a.m. and 10 a.m. Everybody's doing this. So they have the police department have their rookies directing traffic to make sure that people get there safely and everything moves along nicely. And where do they do it? Anybody know? You won't believe me if I told you. Pimlico Racetrack. In the parking lot of Pimlico Racetrack, Jews overtake the place. It is the coolest sight. I take my grandkids. It's just a sight to behold. Thousands and thousands and thousands of Jews coming with their little paper bags and their couple of boxes of Cheerios because they got to get rid of it. And it's just unbelievable. Okay. So you went searching for it Tuesday night. You collected it. You're going to burn it Wednesday morning early. You're going to make a declaration. We actually say words that say something to the effect of any leaven product that I am aware of, or even if I'm unaware of, I am making a public declaration that it is null and void like the dust of the earth. I relinquish ownership. If I happen to have not caught the one Cheerio that my grandchild dropped and went under the heater that I just didn't find, I don't want it in my possession. I make a declaration that it is null and void. I relinquish all ownership to it. These are three steps. You have the search and the destruction, the burning of it. You have in your heart this the intention to say that if I miss something, I abolish it. It's not mine. I relinquish ownership. And then I verbalize it to make it concrete. Three steps to rid myself of any chametz on Pesach. In and of itself, you wouldn't think twice about it. But now that I've brought it to the forefront, you have to be bothered by the question, what are we doing to such an extent that I got to get rid of this? I'll give you an example. Generally speaking, we say that when a person performs a mitzvah, they're supposed to have the intention to fulfill God's commandment. In Hebrew, we say mitzvos srichos kavana. Mitzvos require concentration, intention. You don't do things robotically. You're supposed to engage your mind. To the best of my knowledge, I don't think there's any other place in Jewish law of where we, if you say you had the right intention doing it, I don't make you verify it. I don't make you make a verbal declaration to say that's what it was. This is what's in your heart. Then it's good. That's what I was thinking. When I shook my lulav and esrog, I took one moment. I thought in my brain and I concentrated and I had the thought that said, I am fulfilling the mitzvah of shaking lulav and esrog on Sukkot. I don't have to verbalize it. I don't have to do an action that's going to prove that that's what my intent was. Yet when it comes to getting rid of chametz, we don't rely only on intent. We don't even rely only on verbalization. I require a deed, an action. All three are required. Why are we going so crazy about this? It's a great question. I'm glad I asked. We go to incredible lengths to do get rid of this. To begin to understand this, I'll share with you an insight from the great Kabbalist, the Arizal. The Arizal makes a very cryptic statement. He said that one who's careful about chametz and making sure that he doesn't have any of it in his possession or eating of it, obviously, over the holiday of Pesach, is assured that he will not sin for the rest of the year. You hear that? The Arizal gives you a money-back guarantee. If you're careful to rid yourself of chametz completely, that's like a ticket that you won't do any transgressions during the year. Liz has the skeptical look, for good reason. For good reason. We all mess up. To think that I'm going to be able to go for another 5 months from Pesach till Rosh Hashanah is 5 months I'm going to go without doing not a single transgression. I can only speak for myself. Present company excluded. You guys are way holier than I am. I don't know. I can't speak for myself. I find it difficult to understand
I'm on my phone.
What it is that the Arizal is trying to tell us. But wait, let's take it one more step. Try to unravel this mystery. The Torah says that when I bring an offering on the altar, on the Mizbeach, you're not allowed to bring anything that's leavened. No chametz on the Mizbeach. You hear that? No chametz allowed, not just on Pesach, all year round. Why? I mean, it's a kind of nice, I mean, I would think you would want to bring a nice loaf of bread together with it, or I don't know, something. But why can't, the Torah goes out of the way to say it is forbidden to have chametz on the Mizbeach. Why? What is so significant about this chametz that we go to the nth degree to get rid of it? The Arizal ascribes this incredible, omen, maybe it's not the right word, but this incredible guarantee that if you're careful with chametz, you have like an ace in your pocket that you won't sin, and the Torah forbids it on the Mizbeach. What is so terrible about a good bagel? What is so terrible? I know you were wondering. So the solution to this is a very important concept, and it's not a foreign concept to all of you. Some of you probably have heard this before. What is chametz? What is leavened item? What is it? Well, it's flour and water that's mixed to become dough. And we incorporate one more ingredient to make it leavened. And what is that?
Salt?
Nope, not a requirement.
Make it rise.
Use time.
What? Oh.
Time. Right. That's it. One more ingredient, time. You must wait to allow this dough, that this flour and water mixture, to now ferment. It has to do its thing. And when you mix it, it starts a process of fermentation. Over the course of, just for argument's sake, I'm going to make up a number, wink, wink, 18 minutes, right? If it rises for 18 minutes, that is Chametz Classic 101, right? Flour and water. That same flour and water, by the way, when you mix it and you roll it out and you put it in the oven right away, it never had a chance to rise. We call that matzah. Hey, look at that. The only real difference between chametz and matzah is time. Procrastination, laziness. I'll wait, I'll do it later. Chametz represents the pushing off for later, not dealing with something now. Matzah, and I've mentioned this, I know, Candy, I still owe you a trip to the matzah bakery, right? They are rushing like meshuganas. They're rushing like madmen and ladies, right? Because they can't afford to let the dough rise, because rising will cause it to become chametz, in which case, not only is that batch of dough a problem, but your matzah factory now has to go and be cleansed, scoured in a way you don't want to imagine. So they are not messing around. The Talmud phrases it perfectly. The Talmud says that chametz is the symbol of the Yetzer Hara. Chametz is the symbol of your evil inclination. Chametz is that representation. Do you know why you can't have chametz on the altar? Because its purpose was to provide atonement and gain a deeper relationship with God. If you're lazy about service to God, and you're just, well, I can always go tomorrow, then you're missing opportunities. That runs counter to the whole concept of service to Hashem. Mitzvos can be divided into three categories. Those that are verbalized, those that we have a requirement to say, like Pesach night at the Seder. We have an absolute biblical requirement to speak about the story of the Exodus. It's not enough to think it. It's not even enough to contemplate these most incredible insights. You have a mitzvah biblically to actually recite the story and tell it over. In the Haggadah, we make it very clear. Even if you're all by yourself, you have an obligation to tell the story. You may be the wisest scholar this generation has seen. You have a mitzvah to verbalize and say it. The word Haggadah means to tell over. That's what the word means. Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim, the telling over of the story. Sipur is a story. That's, we verbalize it. So some mitzvos have a, they have to be verbalized. Some mitzvos you can perform in your heart, like your belief in God. That's not necessarily an actionable. It may cause you to do an action, but the mitzvah of believing in God is your heart. And there are certain mitzvos, the vast majority of them, require action. Eating matzah. You can think about the beautiful lessons of the matzah, but you do not fulfill the mitzvah unless you actually eat it. The maror, you can cry all you want, but if you don't eat the maror, it don't count. So there are three, all mitzvahs, they're divided into three categories. There is a requirement that when it comes to chametz, which is the antithesis, right? Because that's the symbol of the Yetzer Hara. That's the anti-mitzvah, the anti-service to God. We need to eradicate it on all three levels. Things that are pertaining to verbalization, things that pertain to thoughts in our hearts and our minds, and things that are actionable. Therefore, just to finish the thought, Sharon, therefore, when it comes to getting rid of chametz in my house, I have to do three things. I have to search and destroy. That's action. That's what I do Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. I find those 10 pieces and I actually destroy them and burn them Wednesday morning. I verbalize and make a declaration that says that any chametz that I may have in my possession, whether I know about it or don't, I abolish and I make as if it is ownerless, like the dust of the earth. I verbalize it, and obviously the intent is that it's not mine. I have to go through all three of those because it encompasses all mitzvos. I want to eradicate the Yetzer Hara from every possible deterrent to my performing a mitzvah, whether it's a mitzvah that requires verbalizing, a mitzvah that requires thought, or a mitzvah that requires action. I want to destroy that Yetzer Hara, destroy that evil inclination to the nth degree. Now perhaps, 1 second, Sharon, now perhaps I understand the beginning of what the Arizal was saying. The Arizal said, if you're so careful about chametz, you'll not do any sins. Yes, of course that makes sense, because when he's not talking about only in the pure physical sense of getting rid of chametz, he's talking about getting rid of the chametz here in your heart. Getting rid of that Yetzer Hara that we listen to that stops us from doing the right thing. If you're careful about eradicating that Yetzer Hara / chametz in your heart, then yeah, you're on the right path to not doing any sins. You'll do the right thing. You're not going to let the Yetzer Hara convince you, oh, you know what? I don't need to go to synagogue this year. I don't need to go even... Oh my God, matzah is so expensive. I got, come on, I just won't eat bread. No. Yeah, it's going to cost. I just picked up my matzah tonight, by the way.
Put away.
Just picked it up right before the class. You know how much it costs? The nice handmade round shmura matzah costs?
$22.
Keep going.
Really?
$29 a pound.
Should have come to Frederick. We have it for $22
a pound.
So. I got it mine for nothing.
Why?
Not that kind. No. Yehuda.
Yeah, those are good. I'm saying I like the round shmura. That's my thing. I'm not saying you have to get it, but I'm just saying for me, that's Pesach. That's why I don't eat matzah from Purim to Pesach. Do you know that? It's not a requirement. Our family custom is that the 30 days before Pesach, no matzah. I don't have a matzah because I am anticipating next Wednesday night sitting at my Seder and eating that matzah. Sharon, let me take Sharon and then Fred. You're on mute. Those are easy questions to answer. I should ask you to unmute. Okay, there you go.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm on my phone because my computer isn't working, so I couldn't do anything. All right. My question is, if everything you're saying about chametz and it's everything, then
why do you have it the rest of the year?
Yeah, exactly. Why should we? We should just not eat it at all.
Okay, it's bad enough you don't eat meat. Don't take away all of our leavened products, too, Sharon. They have nothing to eat except vegetables. It's a good question. I'm going to hold off. You know what?
Okay.
I'll answer it. You have to be practical. You can never go ahead and say, I'm going to disassociate from the world. It is a fact. Bread is the staple of life. Hashem arranged it such that that is something we are to partake of. You have a mitzvah to eat challah on Shabbos. You have a mitzvah. You have a mitzvah to eat matzah too. Yeah, okay, fine. So you say, well, just have matzah all year round. The point being that it's not realistic to go ahead and say that chametz will always be off limits. No. The goal is to recognize your enemy and now come up with strategies how you're going to defeat him. The running away from him is not an answer. Then you're not struggling to overcome. You're avoiding. You're being an ostrich. And you're putting your head in the sand. That's not what Hashem wants from us. We're not here to run away from the Yetzer Hara. Our job is to confront him and overcome him. The point that the Torah is trying to teach us so that we not lose focus of this is that there's a time of the year I remind myself of what this chametz really is. It's a symbol of the Yetzer Hara. Yes, I do interact with it all year round, but I have to know how, and I have to know when, and I have to know strategies on how to overcome. I can't avoid it. That's not living in this world. So chametz can't become forbidden in the practical sense all year round. But that is the reason why, Sharon, why it's not allowed on the mizbeach, why it's not allowed on the altar, because that's not its place. When you're talking about a holy vessel, that is the, you know, one of the essential mechanisms of coming closer to God and holiness and spirituality, keep the Yetzer Hara away. That's not his territory. No chametz on the mizbeach. That's the concept. Fred.
Egg matzah. I thought, I know it's all kinds of question about it, but I thought before Pesach started, like that morning, you could have egg matzah, but that didn't count as eating matzah.
Well, it's a double-edged sword, Fred, because if you're allowed to have it, let's say Wednesday morning, because it doesn't qualify as matzah, then you can't use it for the Seder.
Right. Well,
I would never use it for the Seder.
You can't have it both ways.
But you can't then use it the rest of the week then either, I guess.
That could be a problem, correct.
There for are matzahs that say not for
Egg matzah is a little problematic. Let me say this. I would not call it chametz. It's not chametz. But do you fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah with it? Many, many authorities are not comfortable allowing that.
Okay, then let me phrase it this way, because my brother gets down on me sometimes. I eat regular matzah, manisha. I have the shmorma for the Seder. Okay. Rest of the week, I have, you know, manisha, it's whatever it might be, the real stuff. But because of my stomach, sometimes I can't eat that much, so I also like egg matzah. And my brother said, it's not for Passover. And I said, well, if you're Sephardic, it is. Otherwise, talk to your rabbi. But It doesn't fulfill it for the Seder, but it does. It's okay to eat it during the week, right?
Are you Sephardic?
No, but I'm not talking about.
Fred,
I mean, you okay? Let's say
if you're Sephard, I have a whole list of things you need to start doing. We Ashkenaz, we Ashkenazic Jews have a couple of hardships. That's true. They get to the Sephardic Jews get to eat rice on Pesach. That's true. So that's one up for Sephardim. However, they have a bunch of stuff. Like I'll remind you, the month before Rosh Hashanah, they start Slichos a month before. We only start a few days. So, Fred, if you want to be Sephardi, I got a long list of stuff you got to do.
Wait a minute. You just said, but it's not chometz though, right?
I don't think it's chometz. Look on the package. Does the package say kosher for Passover?
Yes.
A lot of them say no, not kosher for Passover.
You have to be careful.
Once I get say yes, but there's a note on the side.
Okay.
You know,
you got to be careful. I'm just saying it's tricky. It's very tricky. Anyway, so let's keep going here. So again, bringing into focus here, when it comes to getting rid of our chametz, there's a deeper lesson. Obviously, and I'll say this 100 times, the main point is to actually find and rid ourselves of physical chametz. That is the mitzvah. But as is always the case, we try to delve a little deeper. What is a message or a lesson we learn from it? Why is the Torah making us go through so many hoops when it comes to this? Perhaps for tonight, one understanding and one lesson is that we search it out because it's indicative of that leavened dough within us, that laziness, that procrastination, that lack of diligence in serving Hashem. That's what we have to rid ourselves of. And once a year, we go to the nth degree to remind us just how dangerous it is. Two other points about this, and it makes so much sense. Number one, what do we use to search the chametz with? What do we go looking for? What do we use to search for?
A feather.
A feather, but that's not what you're using to search for it.
A candle.
Yes, the question will come up, can I use a flashlight? The answer is yes, you can use it if you don't have a candle or a situation where you can't have a lit flame. That's fine. But the real custom is using an actual candle. It could be one of the Hanukkah candles. I prefer the Shabbos candles because, first of all, it lasts longer. I don't have to burn my fingers after 22 minutes. And it's, you know, coming down to the point of where I feel it. I'd rather have a Shabbos candle that lasts a few hours.
They don't drip as much either.
Well, that's true. That's also true. But why? Why is the custom become that we use a candle to do the search? And what time of day? Arlene, if you had to go looking for something, would you do it at night or would you do it by day?
Probably both.
Just to make sure? Because you're really a physical cleaner.
Because I'm trouble.
Most people who don't really know the inside scoop would say, why are you searching at night, Rabbi? That's dumb. Why don't you search by day? Because when you have the sunlight, you can see much better. The sages tell us that when you have the lights out and you use a candle or a concentrated beam, i.e. a flashlight, you actually see better. Only where you're looking, obviously. The rest of it is dark. But here's a deeper reason, ladies and gentlemen. The verse tells us, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The light, the candle of God, is the soul of man. Hofesh kol chadrei vaten. He, meaning God, who searches all the chambers of your bosom, all the chambers of your innards. The verse that describes God's ability to search within the person, God knows our thoughts, God knows what we're intending, God knows all of that. The term that's used in the same verse to describe it is the candle of God is the soul of man. How perfect is the analogy? If we're trying to eradicate that negativity within us, that yetzer hara, that evil inclination, what perfect reminder of how precious our soul is than using a candle. The candle, a flame, represents that spirituality. The light of God, the candle of God, is the soul of man. How perfect that we use that candle to remind us of that. And where do we look for the chametz? In the cabinets that we know we checked 10 times already? I remember the early years, I would ask, when we first married, I would go and I would search, I search everything unless it has a piece of tape over it that says chametz. Those are the cabinets and the drawers that we're not opening for Pesach. Those are the dishes or the silverware or whatever, you know, things that we're not going to use for it. And I would ask my wife, what about here? And she would say, no, there's no chametz in there. I cleaned it. Okay. And we go to the next one. How about, I cleaned it. So basically the whole house, I don't have to search. She said, well, basically, I said, well, but I have a mitzvah to search anyway. So let's go through this the right way. And we went through every cabinet. And of course, I didn't find anything except the pieces she put out. You check every nook and cranny. You check every possible place. Why? Cracks, crevices, finding the tiniest amount of chametz. Rabbi, get a day job. Seriously, what are you doing all night long searching for a fashtunk and a crumb? This is what you do? The answer is yes. Because if you understand this concept, that it's not just a piece of chametz. It's representative of all those negative things that I'm trying to eradicate within my own personality, within my own character. Then yes, I have to search hard and I have to search deep and I have to be willing to look in some of the places I don't want to look. I have to be honest with myself. Look in all the cracks and crevices. I got to look with deep within myself. Just as the person uses a candle to search a dark room, God uses our soul to plumb our inner recesses of man's thoughts. This is thought number one about what it is that we're searching and removing all of the chametz. I touched on the fact that why is chametz considered the symbol? Okay, we talked about that laziness, procrastination, non-action, versus the matzah, which is all about diligence and action. But there's a second aspect, and that is once you have dough that has risen, got to think about that, right? Dough that has risen, it is very symbolic. What fills that dough now? What is that thing that now that it has fermented and it has now risen, what is in there that wasn't there before?
Air.
There's a new thing in there.
Yeast? Are we talking about yeast?
No.
Well, if it ferments,
yeast,
it's
you don't add yeast. I'm saying when we make matzah, or even if we just let the dough rise by itself, yeast is just a catalyst. Mm-hmm. That just helps it rise. You can create bread without yeast.
Well, if it ferments, is it alcohol of some sort? I mean, is it whatever fermentation is?
It has a byproduct of it, but there's something that is just
air.
That's correct.
Air.
Air. That's correct. It's it's bloated with air. That's all it is. Air. How do I know this? What do I know from this stuff? Is that when my wife makes challah, so she lets it rise, obviously, and it's the dough is overflowing in the mixer because she lets it rise and rise, right? So what does she do? I say, Ilana, the dough, it's coming out. He goes, okay, fine. Just pound it down. Push it down. I'm like, push it down? I say, yeah. Just, you know. So I give it one little push and whoosh, like all the air goes out and, you know, goes back into the bowl. Air. It's bloated with nothingness. It's bloated. It's full of itself. You know what that's reminiscent of? An arrogant person. Hmm. They're filled with air. They're full of themselves. Chametz represents not just that laziness, that procrastination, that inactivity, but it also is a symbol of gava, of arrogance and haughtiness, of where you're so full of yourself. I would say that these two traits, the trait of procrastination and inactivity and the trait of arrogance and haughtiness, are two of the most detrimental traits to a human being. We will look back on our lives and say, not I wish I worked less. I mean, worked. I worked more. I did so. But no, You're gonna look back. We're all gonna say, I could have done more. I didn't do enough. I wasted opportunities. Not because you did so. We did a lot. I'm sure all of us have done a lot in our lives. But we're not going to look back and have the regret of action. We're going to have the regret of inaction. And hopefully, as we've matured in life, we've learned that there's more to life than just us. And not to be so haughty and not to be so filled with ourselves. Somebody once said, take away the self-conceited, and there'll be more room in the world for the rest of us. There's a lot of truth to that. Adam and Eve were the last creation, right? Before Shabbos, on the sixth day of creation, right? Why were they the last creation? One, because they are the most important. As I gave the analogy, the actor and actress don't get on stage until all the props are in the proper place. So that's true. But there's a second, a flip side to that. You know why they're last? Because if man becomes arrogant, we remind him, even the lowly gnat, the mosquito came before you. Don't be so full of yourself, Adam. It's a good thing there's no Adam on this group, right? Haughtiness is considered one of the worst traits in the Talmud. It says it's similar to idol worshiping. How could that be? Why is it so bad? You know who the idol you're worshiping?
Yourself.
You! You're going to tell you, you're going to speak that way to me. Do you know who I am? You ever hear that? Somebody gets all upset. Mr. Tuchman, I'm not a mister. I'm a rabbi. How dare you address me with that title? I earned my rabbinic degree. You not know who I am? I'm the adult education of Shoresh. That's who I am. We become the idol, and we are so worshiping ourselves. That's why the Talmud says that somebody who's so arrogant and so haughty, they are akin. That's very much like idol worshiping, as opposed to the beautiful mitzvah of matzah. Matzah that we have for this next holiday is reminiscent of humility. Don't be so full of yourself. What you see is exactly what you get. It's not blown up. It's not larger than life. It is what it is. No airs about it. You like that? No air, A-I-R. No airs about it. Sorry, Alan. Right? But that's what matzah is. It's such a beautiful lesson. It's about activity. Don't procrastinate. Don't push it off. Work. Come on. We got what to do. And don't be so full of yourself. These are the two parts of getting rid of the chametz and eating the matzah. That is my Pesach thought for you. However, I would not be doing it justice. I want to share one other mitzvah for tonight. It's not a room, Robin, but it's outside. We are entering the spring, the season, the spring. It is, as I've mentioned in the past, a requirement. The holiday of Pesach must be in spring. There, and that's the concept of why we have a leap year on the Jewish calendar. Whereas the Gregorian calendar, when there's a leap year, we add one day. In the Jewish calendar, when it's a leap year, we add a full month. The main reason behind it is to make sure that the holiday of Pesach, the month of Nisan, is always in the spring. That's the main reason, okay? But there's a mitzvah here. Right? This is like a new chapter. We're not matzah. We're not chametz. New mitzvah here. It's a special bracha that we make on the blossoming of trees. Many, many people are not aware that there's an actual bracha that we should say. This time frame right now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about this week, next week, and the following week. Really, this is the season to make this bracha. The bracha is an acknowledgement. Now, I want to be careful. There are a lot of laws related to it. It has to be, number one, on a fruit-bearing tree. It has to be a fruit-bearing tree. Apple, orange, anything. It has to be one that actually will produce edible fruits. If it's a barren tree, or it's old and it's past, it's no longer producing apples, you can't make this bracha. Because when do you make this bracha? when there's a bud and a blossom, not when the fruit has started to grow. You're at an early stage. It can't be the branch with nothing on it. It's when that blossom first begins. If I remember my science class, it goes blossom, bud, fruit. I believe that is the order. First, it's just a blossom, like a little flowery kind of thing on the branch. Then it becomes a bud, which is the start of the fruit, which then grows into the actual fruit. This bracha is said upon the blossoms. That's why everybody makes a big deal. Oh, look, the cherry blossoms are now. Yeah, this is why. Because it's the blossoming. It's known as Birchas Ha'ilan, the blessing of the trees. What's fascinating about this, and there's so much about it, we're still in quote-unquote winter. We're getting out of it, and one can be mindful to think, ah, come on, there's no beauty yet. Wait till you have the fruit. When you've got that nice, beautiful, shiny apple, or down in Florida where the Corbies are, you got these beautiful oranges and these groves are just, ah, that's beauty. Ah, it's just a, no. This is exactly when the Torah takes us and reminds us, this is the power of renewal. You think it looks barren? You think you're at a tough point in your life? You think it's challenging? There's nothing that can come good of this? Wrong. Look at the trees. The trees have been dormant for months. They haven't produced anything in months. Oh, it'll never happen, Rabbi. I think our tree is gone. No. Look, there's a tiny blossom that's beginning already. There's still chill in the air, but there is a power of renewal. Gives us an ability to give thanks for the glory of God's beautiful earth, the beautiful world that God has created. We take a moment, we leave our offices, we leave our rooms, we leave our homes, and we go out and we look at the beautiful trees and the beautiful world that God has created. The actual blessing reads as follows. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe. For nothing is lacking in his universe, and he created in it good creatures and good trees to cause mankind pleasure with them. To give mankind pleasure. You hear this? God did not create a world and give us a Torah to make our lives miserable. No. Au contraire. It's just the opposite. He gave us a world to enjoy. Pleasure. Let's be honest. Fruits are a bonus. We could survive with vegetables and plant-based things. We don't need fruits. It's not one of the critical things. You need your vitamins. You need your, no question. But fruits are more of a luxury than vegetables are. The Talmud actually says, the great Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the great Rabbi Yehuda, the prince, he was very wealthy. Rabbi was very wealthy. He had, the Talmud says, he was able to afford to have fruits and vegetables on his table all year round. Now, for us, that's no biggie because the supermarkets do us a favor. They import it from all over the world. But in the old days, you only had what grew in your region. And you don't get certain things during certain times of the year. I'll give you an example. Nowadays, to have a pomegranate, you can get it almost all year round, pretty much. Yes, there are certain times that they're tastier, they're sweeter, but you can get it. I remember, it wasn't that long ago, I remember as a kid getting pomegranates for Rosh Hashanah so that you can make a special Shechianu on a new fruit. It was a big deal. They weren't even in season. They were just able to get. Nobody saw a pomegranate in August. It was unheard of. Maybe if Rosh Hashanah was at the end of September, you can get it in a week or maybe 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. Nowadays, you can get it all the time. So when you go ahead, when the Hebrew month of Nisan, the month we just entered, immediately upon seeing the trees in bloom, all until the time the actual fruits begin to grow, you're entitled and encouraged to make this bracha. It's one of only four blessings that are recited every year, but only once a year. Did you know that? Great trivia question. There are only four blessings that you are required to say every year, but only once a year. You do not say it more than once a year. This fruit, this bracha on blossoming of tree, fruit trees, you only make it once. You do it anytime this week, next week, whatever, the next few weeks, you're done for till next year. Even if you see more blossoms, you don't have to make another bracha. You shouldn't. Once a year. There are three others. You get an extra bonus. I'll save a piece of shmura matzah for you. Or maybe one of my wife's delicious pastries that she makes for Pesach. Tell me any of the other three that are said every year, but only once a year. Great question. Ladies should know this better than the guys.
Matzah blessing?
No, matzah we say matzah we do twice. Two seders.
Oh, except Israel.
True. Come on. I'll give you a hint, ladies. Think about a special mitzvah that you do that most guys do not do.
With the candle somewhere.
Good. Okay. But, go ahead.
Well, I don't know what prayer would be different than you don't normally say.
Ah, come on.
Hanukkah.
No, that's 8 days, Arlene, even in Florida. Come on, lighting candles on a special day.
Oh, the Shekhiyah.
No.
That's a big holiday.
No.
Marriage?
No.
On a birth?
No, come on, lighting candles, come on.
Your site?
No. Lighting candles like you do for Shabbos. There's another time you light them. That makes a special bracha. You only say it once a year, every year.
When you go around searching for matzah.
Well, that is a second bracha. That's correct. When you burn the chametz, that's correct. That's number two. But we're still on candles. How about Yom Kippur, ladies? The lighting candles before Yom Kippur is a special bracha. Lahadlik ner shel Yom HaKippurim. Or shel Yom Kippur. You only say it once a year, but it's every year. And then there's one more, and I'll spare you. That's the bracha that we add special on Tisha B'Av. There's a special bracha added in the Shmona Esrei, in the Amidah. We change the terminology on that one mincha prayer of Tisha B'Av. Those are the only four that are said every year, but only once a year. Okay. That being said, let me share this last thought with you. Okay? Because it's late already. Okay, right. This idea of the trees, they give us a message of hope. God who can bring blossoms to barren tree can help bring an era of redemption. Fine. Okay. But here's the line I wanted to share with you very quickly. Okay, here's the issue. On the one hand, we have this bracha that we're supposed to recognize that Hashem created this beautiful world. I look at those trees and I say, God's creations are beautiful. Sounds great. Except here's the problem. There's a Mishnah. The Mishnah reads as follows. Rabbi Yaakov taught, one who is reviewing his Torah studies while walking along the way and interrupts his study to exclaim, how splendid this tree is, how fair and beautiful the field is. The scripture considers this as if he has forfeited his soul. He has done a terrible, terrible thing. One second. Rabbi Yaakov tells us that if you're learning, you're studying Torah, you're reviewing it as you're going along the road, and you notice beautiful orchards, and you comment on it and say how beautiful these orchards are, you've done a terrible thing. It's a tragedy. What do you mean? On the one hand, We have a bracha that's supposed to specifically recognize the beauty of creation. Excuse me. We have this bracha that we are to recognize the beauty of creation, and yet Rav Yaakov says to go ahead and to comment on the beauty of the tree is terrible. How can that be? I'm going to share with you something that Rav Kook was one of the first chief rabbis in Israel. Great philosopher. I'm just getting more and more into his works. Very deep, very deep. So, having taught this class for a few years already, you guys have sharpened my mind. So I think I'm in a better place to understand it. I mean that seriously, by the way. Listen to what Rav Kook writes. He says, the error of the one who exclaims how beautiful and splendid this tree is not that he did something wrong in voicing and expressing the beauty, the aesthetic beauty of what God created. That's perfectly legitimate. That's what the bracha on the trees is all about. His error is that he sees this wonder as an interruption from his Torah study. Let me read that Mishnah to you again. You probably missed it. Rabbi Jacob taught, one who is reviewing his Torah studies while walking along the way and interrupts his study to exclaim how splendid this tree is, how fair the field is. That scripture considers to be a terrible thing. Why, says Rav Kook? Because he's compartmentalizing. Torah, God, spirituality, beautiful, beautiful. And I interrupt that mindset to address what in his mind is a different mindset. One that's about aesthetic beauty and the physicality and just the sheer grace of the creatures. And says Rav Kook, you have done a terrible thing. The two are synthesized together. They're not, oh, there's the Torah perspective, the Torah way of looking at it and my Torah life. And then there's also the beauty of nature and the beauty of the world and this, and they're two separate compartmentalized ideas. Incorrect, says Rav Kook. You cannot compartmentalize life and isolate your inward directed, your spiritual life of prayer, Torah study, and separate that from the beauty of the outside world. That is incorrect. The outside world is a reflection of that same God who gave us a Torah. If the person would have commented a little differently, if he would have commented as he's walking along, reviewing his Torah study, and said, wow, what a beautiful tree God created, I think things would have been different. Mm-hmm. That's a very different perspective. All this guy did was to say how beautiful the tree is, as if to suggest that's disassociated from God and Torah. That's his mistake. We need to be cognizant, and I think that's part of what this mitzvah of going ahead and making a bracha on the tree is all about, is to learn to integrate the beauty of nature, how beautiful this tree really is, within the context of Torah and spirituality. They're not diametrically or mutually exclusive of each other. To recognize that this natural beauty appears within it and through it. The kicker for me is when he ends with this line. Don't we call the Torah itself the tree of life? Eitz Chaim hi. Eitz Chaim hi. It's a tree of life. The exact words that describe the essence of Torah is to recognize that it's a tree. Looking at a beautiful tree is not disassociated from Torah and God, but just the opposite. The being able to see God in nature, to see and reveal the spiritual aspects of the natural world in which we live, that is perhaps even higher than just going through it as just a, oh, that's a nice tree. The point that I'm trying to make is that when we should go out and recognize God's beauty in nature, but not as beauty in and of itself, but as God's creation, It's just another understanding and a deeper appreciation and recognizing the beauty that God has given us within the world, within ourselves, and within our ability to have that relationship with him. That's really what it boils down to. So let's review very quickly what we've done tonight. We've spoken about Pesach and talk about this at your seders. Talk about this idea of what chametz that we have to get rid of. Why we go to such an nth degree is because the Yetzer Hara is that, because chametz is the symbol of the Yetzer Hara, of that negative aspects within ourselves that we have to eradicate, both in thought, in words and in action on all three levels, encompassing all the mitzvahs we do, as opposed to matzah, that is all about activity, not procrastination. It's about active, and it's also about humility. Don't be full of yourself like chametz being bloated. In addition, we talked about this idea of making a bracha on the blossoming of the trees, which represent two ideas. One is the power of renewal and hope that even in the dark winter, there's already sap that's growing, going through the trees that begin now to blossom. There's always that hope for whatever the situation we find ourselves in. That's the beauty of it. And secondly, is to recognize the beauty that's in nature within the context that this is God's creation. Look at the beautiful world that God has given us. Not just because it is beautiful, but because it's an extension of God's beauty himself. That's what we have. Two ideas, hopefully, to keep you going for the next few weeks. I wish everybody, obviously, any questions, I'm happy to address it. But if you do need to go right ahead. But wish you a happy and kosher Pesach, a beautiful Yom Tov with your family or with ever whom you're having it. I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, and we will continue our journey. The last segment of our adult ed, which will take us till almost the summer. But we have a few more rooms that we still have to cover. Anyway, yes, let's start with Sharon.
Am I muted?
No.
Okay, great. Two things. I have the times that you were talking about earlier. If you want the times, I can give you the times. And then the other, the times for Pesach is stop eating chametz at 10:59 in the morning.
That's for Frederick. That's for Baltimore.
It's from the Frederick Chabad.
Okay, so that's Frederick time. Baltimore's a couple of minutes different.
Yeah, right.
Virginia's like, I don't know, that's like another time zone.
How about Florida?
You burn the chametz until 11:59 a.m.
That's a good point. You don't have to burn it at. You can burn it anytime up until.
Till, right.
Right.
And then candle lighting is at 7:19. So,
right. So yeah, I have something similar. We have around 10:16 chametz, and then you have to get rid of your chametz by about 11:30, give or take.
I haven't even seen our candles.
All right. And then my other question, it might be too complex for right now, but my question was for Debrux, is it who and why? But that might be too in depth. Debrux
is a good question. It's a Yiddish word, Gebrux. There are many people that don't, that are, as we understand now, having any association with something that might become chametz. You have to be super careful. We're very, very careful about it. So there are those that have the custom to not put even matzah in touch with water or any liquid.
We're going to go fine.
Because there's a concern that if the matzah gets wet, there might be a little bit of flour or dough that didn't get fully baked, which does happen, right? That once you have it get wet from a liquid, you could theoretically be restarting the fermentation process again, in which case you could theoretically have chametz. It can become chametz. Now, this is not a bona fide, it is chametz. It's a concern.
Oh, look at that.
Become. It might become. There are many, many people. They say, what the word terminology is, they don't eat gebrux. They don't eat any wet matzah, any food item that's made of matzah to come in contact with water. So, for example, those who don't eat gebrux, those who are very careful like this, they won't have matzah balls in their soup. Because matzah balls made from matzah, you put directly in your soup, you might come to that. There are those that are careful that they won't dip. Like I love to dip my challah. Whew. I love to dip my matzah in the chicken soup. I like it. They won't do that. That's where it comes from, Sharon. It's a custom. There are those many in the Hasidic circles.
That's what I wanted to know. Custom. Like who did it? Yeah.
Many, many, many in the Hasidic circles have that custom. For example, my daughter Shifra, who just got married, Baruch Hashem, so her new husband, Zev, his family custom is not to eat gebrux. They will not have matzah balls. They won't be dipping their matzah in the soup, any of that. And therefore, we'll be careful that when they're here, we won't have it. I don't want to subject him to eat something that he's not comfortable eating.
Now that Shifra's married into that family, does she have to do it as well?
Yep. After his customs now. I told her, this is the last time that she's going to have certain foods. Sorry, buddy. Matzah farfel, right? Some people like it because they don't like the garbage cereals that are made from who knows what, right? They take matzah farfel and they'll put it in a bowl of milk. That's like their cereal. They won't do it. Non-gebrux won't eat it. They won't have that.
Well, what about the Seder where you're supposed to put the haroset on top of the matzah and the haroset has like a little bit of...
Yeah, not so simple. They will use not such liquidy. Okay. And by the way, it doesn't go on your matzah. It goes on your maror.
I'm sorry, on the maror.
But that's a big difference.
You make the sandwich.
Right, the sandwich.
No, that's on your maror.
Okay.
That's another interesting, I don't want to say myth. But people have taken it so far out of context. They think you have to have like 14 tablespoons of haroset for every one bite of maror you have. That's not what it is. It's really supposed to be just a dip. That's all it's supposed to be. Huh. People heap on haroset and more haroset. I'm not even sure that they're tasting the maror anymore. But that's what they're very careful about. That's called non-gebrux.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Fred.
This has to do with koshering a microwave for Pesach. My sister-in-law tells me that it's the tray, you know, that goes around the glass tray. You can't clean that. The rest of the oven, I'm told, the microwave can be cleaned properly for Passover, but not that glass. You literally need to replace it.
Correct.
With
That's
a new.
Many, many, many people do.
Why? Because there's a glass. I mean, there's a glass door. Isn't that glass on the door?
Your food doesn't sit on the door.
Your food sits in a bowl before it sits on that. And usually you put a napkin or a paper towel on top of it. And she was told.
It's not necessarily enough to prevent it being absorbed in the glass tray.
Microwaves are cheap enough. Get a new one.
No, I'm saying that's the issue.
This was interesting. Hers is so old. They no longer make it, but I ordered a generic one, hoping it'll work. Otherwise, I'm bringing
it out. That's the issue. The issue is that the tray might have absorbed chametz, and then you can't kosher that.
Also, Carol Cosman, she used to say something about if the top got hot, and if the top didn't get hot, had to do with whether it was could be done or not. So,
if you want to read up on this, Fred,
yeah.
star-k.org star-k.org They have a whole thing on Pesach about kashering appliances and utensils, and they give the whole background and what to do.
Okay.
Excellent resource. Star-k.
Oh, thank you.
And then Candy.
Yeah, this is a simple question.
Candy,
curious. I bought my round matzah from Kabad, and the rabbi was really pleased because he said, you know where this was made? And I said, no. And he said, in the Ukraine. And I said, really? He said, yeah. And he said, Every year we try to pick a place that needs our support. And this year we thought that we should buy the matzah from the Ukraine. What you bought like that, or yours from Israel, or you don't know?
Mine were baked in New York. The Jerusalem of East. Yeah, mine were baked in New York. I'm pretty sure they weren't imported. Susan.
Okay, matzah is made.
Sorry, we lost you there.
Matzah is made from wheat, correct?
It doesn't have to be. It could be made from spelt.
For Pesach.
Yeah.
Okay. It can't be made from spelt?
Yeah.
And be kosher? Okay.
Yeah.
There
are people who are gluten-free.
That's my question.
They make spelt matzah.
Yes.
Yes, they absolutely do. Do you know Shelly? You know Shelly in my office?
Yes.
Her husband and their daughter are very gluten-free. They get spelt or oat. I mean, that you can make it of pretty much the grains.
And you're still fulfilling the mitzvah with, okay.
Yep. It does not have to be wheat.
Okay. Now,
mind you pay through the nose because it's a commodity.
Yes.
But theoretically, yes.
Yes, thank you. Because I have a family member who is very concerned about making sure they fulfill the mitzvah.
You can get gluten-free. If you have trouble, Susan, call me or let me know. I'll see what I can do to help you out.
Yes, thank you very much.
Robin.
Just because I was transitioning from the car to the computer, I just want to make sure I got one thing right, then I have a question.
Yes, the next holiday is called Passover.
No, I got that. No, the three things is like Tuesday night, you have to hide, and then the 10 pieces and collect them.
Correct.
Okay, and that's in the dark, I guess we just figured out, right, with the flashlight, you're collecting
correct,
them.
Correct, or candle, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, candle, correct. Flashlight. And then you burn them Wednesday morning.
Correct.
According to Sharon, by 11:59. And then make the declaration.
At the time you burn it.
Okay, at the time you burn it. Okay.
There is, I mean, I didn't get into it, but there is a similar version that I say after the searching of the chametz at night. In every Haggadah, by the way, you have this. If you open up your Haggadah a couple of days early, which I recommend anyway, so that you familiarize yourself with it and not look at it and say, I thought I knew this last year. Look at it ahead of time. It's really a good idea. But on the first page or two, it has this, the bracha you make before you do the search, how to do the search, the declaration after you find the 10 pieces, burning it the next morning. They have all that.
Okay. So I think I got that right, with the three things?
Yep.
Okay, but so then my question is, and I hate to do this at the end because it might be more time consuming than you would think, but why the burning? Why burning over some other getting rid of something? Like, we didn't talk about burning in the symbolism. I'm curious about why it has to be burned.
Let me think for a moment.
And besides the commandment, like, why would it have to be burned?
I want to think a little more about it, but I think the answer is that burning something is the symbol of total destruction. You'll forgive me, but it was the first thought that came to my mind. Unfortunately, just 75 years ago, that was the method by which they wanted to show total eradication, is where they put those bodies in the crematorium. Mm-hmm. Burning something to a crisp, burning something to oblivion is really what it is. You know, it, believe it or not, it talks about it in halacha. What happens if you can't burn it? What happens if you can't? Whatever the situation is. So in halacha, it'll bring it down that now it is. You can flush it down the toilet. Okay. I wouldn't recommend big pieces again. You know, little Cheerios is fine. You don't want to stuff your toilet. But that's the idea, is that you want to make sure that it's completely gone. If I just crumble it and throw it to the wind, it's not gone. Not necessarily gone.
Right.
When you burn something.
Right, but I mean, totally, if you do it like if you put it in like a trash compactor thing, it's going to be
not destroyed. It's not there, but but you have not eradicated it.
Okay, so it's an eradication.
Yes, because again, if the chametz is representative of the Yetzer Hara, I don't want to just play footsie with it. I want to eradicate it. I want it gone. I think that's the simple understanding. I'm sure there's a deeper on. It's not coming to me right now.
That's okay. No, I was trying to figure that out because, you know, the trash and the compactor, and I'm thinking, well, you're getting rid of it, but I understand now the eradication. It has to be totally obliterated. Okay.
Could you feed it to the ducks?
Yeah.
Or another animal?
That's a great question. I think the answer is no. There is, you know, part of this is going through a process. It's not a technical thing. You're going down a checklist. These actions, as is all the cases with any mitzvah that we do, our actions have impact on us, right? You feel a certain way when you do it a certain way. If part of the lesson of what we're trying to do is to eradicate that chametz, to eradicate that within us, so then just being a nice guy and say, well, I'm just going to give it to the ducks. You're not eradicating. You're not tearing it out of your system. You're doing even less than putting in a trash compactor. You're just, you know, you're feeding the ducks. It's a nice thing. And soon, before you even know it, the custom's going to be, let's feed the ducks on Erev Pesach. I say that jokingly, but I think that part of it is to go through the hard process. You know, we gave this once upon a time, we spoke about this. Nachmanides writes, what's the theory behind, what's the concept behind bringing animal sacrifices? It's a hard concept. But the thought behind it is that when a person brought an animal and saw what was done to it in terms of it losing its life and part of it is burned and offered, and the person should have the thought, that really should be me. I deserve this. I went ahead and I sinned against God and I want forgiveness from this. I should be the one up there. There's a certain process that you have to go through. It's catharsis that you have to go through the motions to feel it. Burning the chametz should be a lesson that I need to do something in my life to eradicate that Yetzer Hara. I got to do one thing to start changing that behavior. I think that will get lost if it's just, we'll get rid of it. Even if it's with a good thing of feeding the ducks.
Why 10?
That was how I started. That was so funny. I shelved it. That was my starting point in preparation for this class. I was going to talk about the search for the chametz and why 10. Oh my gosh, Sharon, you're killing me.
Sam.
You're opening my brain.
The one quick answer is that there are 10 levels. We describe different ideas in 10 levels. 10 is very often used as the number that represents a medium between A and B. 10 levels between A and B. To get from here to there, you traverse 10 levels. There are 10 levels in the rungs, so to say, towards spirituality. And similarly, in the opposite direction, there's 10 rungs going down away from spirituality. That's the quick answer given our discussion tonight. When we go ahead and we search for 10, what we're doing is we're removing ourselves from the 10 levels of impurity, that which takes us away from spirituality, and moving us in the direction of the 10 levels of spirituality. That's the short answer. But obviously there's more to it. I literally was preparing for that, and then I said, no, we got to switch it. Great question. All right, Susan, last bit here.
Okay, it's not a question. It's more, it came to me when you were explaining to Robin about the burning, which is that even as you're talking about it and the way you were talking about it, there's something about the embodiment that it is that doing that action really connects with what you said about the kavana inside the heart, and that when we can really physicalize it, really physicalize the mitzvah, then It just it
becomes more a part of you and internalized.
Yes.
100%. 100%. It's a general concept. We find this, you know, you want to tell somebody you love them. So you say, I love you. It's a very nice thing. But if you really want to express I love you, you do it with an action. Clear the dishes, right? I'll end with this. Okay, this is my last thing. There's a concept that when, you know, I wear a tallis on Shabbos day. I wear a tallis every morning, but Shabbos. There are those authorities that say that one should not really fold the tallis on its regular folds on Shabbos. Another time, another place. So what many people will do is they'll just informally put it in their tallis bag. And then they say is that Saturday night after Shabbos is you refold your tallis. And what's so good about that? It's a good omen for shalom bayis, for marital harmony. They say in the hippie jibby world that's a good omen for shalom bayis. So I had a Rebbe once who was sharing this idea, and he said, I don't know. I don't know about the hippie jibby world. I don't know. It is a good omen for marital harmony. It's not a good thing. One thing I guarantee is definitely a good omen for marital harmony. Yeah, what's that, Rebbe? Offer to wash the dishes after Shabbos. That's a big good omen for marital harmony. But it is. When we do actions, they speak much louder than just words. That's what I think, the concept. All right. Have a fabulous, fabulous pace. Yes, Robin.
I'm so sorry. I don't want to prolong this. And I'm sure I could look this up, but the burning thing, like, do you just burn the 10 pieces individually? Do you put them in some sort of like container?
You can put them in a bag, put them in a plastic, in a paper bag. And
does it have to be inside, outside? Does it matter?
You don't do it inside.
Barbecue grill works.
I'm sorry?
You have to be careful, Fred. One second. I had that situation during COVID.
Right.
COVID, there was no public burning because nobody was allowed to be near anybody. And one of the suggestions is I have a grill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, but you better be darn sure that you burnt it well. I had the situation of where we put it in, and it happened to be one piece fell below the burner and into the trap. And I could see clearly, as clear as day, that was a bona fide piece of chametz that was still there. So you have to be careful. So I wouldn't recommend necessarily. What some people do if they don't have this, is they in their backyard. Literally, they take 5-6 stones, just made a little circle, put a couple of twigs, a couple of you can burn it. As long as it's burnt to a point of where it's not recognizable as food anymore.
I guess I was thinking of the kind of grill that's like a portable one that is nothing but a piece of metal that's...
But burn it, but make sure it gets burned. And
we did that, at someone in Frederick. The rabbi would go to one person's home, we'd all bring our stuff, and we'd get the grill going, and just watch it burn till it was just perfect. Nothing but ash.
Perfect. Are you burning in your oven?
No.
Why would you? Your oven is for Pesach. I hope you're not putting your chametz back in your oven.
Oh, no, timing. I'm sorry. Okay.
A grill like you'd buy at
like
the store.
George Foreman, like a small little portable.
I wasn't sure what he was saying. Okay.
You know, you go to talking you about the right, and you get this $10 grill. It's a metal stand. It's a small little nothing.
Right. Okay. I crumpled up a paper bag, put it on the sidewalk by the garage, and just burned it until it was gone.
I just want to watch, make sure the ashes didn't fly and set fire to something. That's all.
Okay. I'm sorry. Thank you.
No, it's all good. All right. Have a chai kosher. Have a very happy and kosher Pesach. I look forward to seeing you guys in a few weeks. And just enjoy. Share with me a nice insight that you have over Pesach when we get back together. I would love to hear it.
And remember to count the Omer on the start, counting the Omer on the second night of Passover. Because we won't see you next week, so you can't remind us.
That's true. Right. Don't forget to count the Omer Thursday night.
That's right.
All right. Have a great one, everybody.
Thank you. Good night, Liz.